Radio St. Pete presents Typewriter Talks with Maureen McDowell, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit.
Hello, welcome to Typewriter Talks. This podcast features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. My name is Maureen McDowell, and I'm the founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. On Typewriter Talks, we discuss all kinds of writerly topics, hoping to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Today, we are happy to welcome Chelsea Catherine. Chelsea has lived and worked all over the country. They won the Mary C. Moore Award for Nonfiction through the Southern India Review. And their second book, Summer of the Cicadas, won the Quill Prose Award from Red Hen Press. In 2022, they spent a month in Alaska at the Alderworks Artist Retreat. They are part of a cohort of Valley Creates, artists grantees in Western Massachusetts, and their story, The Not Deer, was recently published in an anthology out of London, UK. Their work can be found in Hobart, Passengers Journal, The Florida Review, and others. Welcome, Chelsea.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you were our, when we did Typewriter Talks during COVID as a Zoom video, you were our very first interviewee. So it feels very full circle.
It does. I think I was thinking about that yesterday, about where I was when you interviewed me. Mm-hmm. I was in this like tiny little apartment in St. Pete that was overrun with palmetto bugs. And life is just really different now. So it's pretty cool to see how much has changed.
Yeah, aka cockroaches. Palmetto bugs. That's our nice term for cockroaches. Oof.
Yeah.
And now really you are, go ahead.
I'm really happy that where I live now does not have those.
Yes, and you're in Vermont, in Massachusetts.
In Massachusetts. Yeah.
Massachusetts. So you're our first interviewee out of Florida. It's so exciting.
Yeah. Well, part of me still is in Florida. I miss it, but you know, we're here. So
we're in the dead of summer right now. So you're in the best possible place right now, for sure.
True. Yeah. It's like 75 and breezy today.
Oh, so I wish I could come through the podcast and like sit next to the, like drink tea. And 75 is heaven weather to me. So
yeah,
eat it up. So tell us what you're working on right now.
What am I working on right now? I'm doing some edits to two different novellas. I decided that I am not a novel writer and the novella form fits my writing better. So I'm editing a couple of those and preparing to send them out places. And then, you know, in the interim, I kind of do some short stories and short essays. So that's what I've been doing.
I love that you have decided that the novella is the form for you.
Yeah,
rebellious in some ways.
It's just I don't like the standard word count. I feel like sometimes things can be said better and more clearly in the shorter form. And I notice that my writing gets less good when I try to push it into that longer novel form. So I've just kind of gone back to the novella, which is what I did when I was a kid. That's the word length that I wrote for most frequently.
So how long is typically a novella? Like 100 and something pages?
I'm not sure what the page limit is, but usually it's between like 40K and 65K. So like around between that area.
Yeah. That's so cool. I think that there are so many standards of what it means to like what you need to do as a writer to fit into this mold of the literary industrial machine. And it's just like, there's so many different ways to do it. Like you can self-publish, you can do hybrid. I love that you're bringing the novella back.
Bringing it back, yeah. Well, I think it's making a comeback, honestly, everywhere. I see a lot more publishers looking for novellas. I've seen more of them coming out. I think counterculture is taking over and I really like that, so.
Yeah, like zines are not very long. And I always followed Aaron Comet Bus. He has a zine that he's had forever. And he would do, they were almost like little novellas. He marketed his, he created a type a font for his handwriting and then
oh, nice.
Wrote these zines, but they were like little mini novellas that would come out and we just like salivated for them. Like there's a new one coming. And I'd go to Downtown Books and News in Asheville. That was in the early 90s and new issues would come out. And it was like just enough. Like you could devour it in like a weekend or even a day or so. So I love that. So tell us what a typical day looks like for you as a writer.
Oh, that's a good one. So I actually work full-time as a grant writer for nonprofits. So basically I write proposals that are like research papers every day.
Mm-hmm.
I submit those and then hopefully people give us funding. So I wake up real early in the morning and I start work around 7:30. I do that for 7 hours. Then I'll go take a walk, you know, do whatever else I need to do. And then my evenings are dedicated to writing. So either editing, researching where to publish, sending stuff out or working on new things. But this summer I'm primarily focusing on editing. So
it's a different part of your brain.
Yeah. A summer up here, you have to take advantage of the outside. So I haven't been pushing myself to put words on the paper as much. I'll do that in the winter.
Yeah. Are you finding the change of season, like being in the wintertime, is better for you creatively?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, this winter, I think I wrote more and better than I ever have in my life. And it shows like this first half of 2023, I've had more pieces get picked up than I ever have before. And the majority of those pieces were written, you know, in the fall and winter of 2022. So, I think it's really conducive to creative writing.
Yeah. Cause it kind of forces you to be introspective and be quiet.
Yep. You're stuck inside. It's cold. You're thinking about stuff. So yeah, I think it works.
Put it on the page.
Yeah.
Of that. So how has your writing process changed over the years?
Oh, that's a good one. I used to push myself really hard to write a certain amount of words every day. And actually my friend Yuli Restrepo, she told me maybe a year and a half ago, I only write when I really feel like it. And I thought about that for a long time, because I experienced some burnout last summer of just really pushing to write novels, to get published, to get a book deal. And I burnt myself out.
Yeah.
So I don't do that anymore. I just kind of write when the inspiration hits. When I'm not putting new words on the page, I try to read, I try to edit. And it works a lot better. So I'm really grateful for that advice.
I like that balance.
Yeah.
Still kind of, I mean, I think even editing and reading is still part of the writing process, but it's the actual like putting words to page. And we tend to put our, you know, get really hard on ourselves if we're not doing that. But
for sure.
I think if you look at the whole system as organic and also, we had Lorraine Montague and I keep bringing this up. She's like, oh, I'm a seasonal writer. So it depends. This is a season for me to edit. And this is a season for me to do this. And I love that idea of we're not just like cogs in the machine, crank, crank, crank it out. And we have to, you know, go at our own pace and see what works for us. But then there's other people that work in that mode where they can crank, crank, crank it out and put out a book a year. It's just, we're all so different.
Very true. And we all change over time. So that did used to work for me. And now that I am getting older, it doesn't anymore. So it's been good to have a variety of like creative writer friends to give me different methods of being a writer. So
yeah, and your process might change again. That's so interesting. Because like I have been dictating, I dictated a whole book through voice to text. And I never would have imagined that would be the way that I would write this book. But it's that the format of the book, it's kind of a memoir poetry hybrid, and it needed, I think faster than I type, and I needed to I just started doing it naturally. And then I was like, and now I like write my column that way too. And but before I always wrote everything by hand, and I would be like you could be really hard on yourself because if your writing process suddenly changes, but I think we're all meant to evolve, right?
Absolutely.
So, what are some of your major themes, and why do you think these themes are what you're drawn to?
Speaking of seasons, I think my themes have changed over the seasons. I think when I first came out of the closet, I was really focused on writing about acceptance and love and community. And now that I've been out for a while and am in a different kind of era of my life, I've noticed that my themes now are mostly focused on capitalism, oppression, white supremacy, how those themes show up in really small spaces in our lives, but can be really important. Also, just kind of like aging, getting older, dealing with the ups and downs of life. Those are popping up just a lot in my work now, but they weren't so much when I was younger.
Was it like conscious, or it just came in their own like way?
It just came. So, like, it actually started when I moved here. And I think it's because the culture up north is very different. It's very work focused. It's very demanding. And so having that jolt of the change in culture really impacted me and made me be like, I have to deal with this somehow. So I started writing. And the first piece that I wrote was about an alternate universe where CEOs can kill their employees when they make a mistake. And that got published pretty quickly. And I just kind of went from there of like exploring how do I get some of this like discomfort out of my body and onto the page. And that's just kind of what naturally like came up.
Has that been like part of your writing process, trying to get the discomfort out of your body and onto the page?
Yeah, absolutely. And asking questions and trying to get a bigger picture of why things happen. That's always been why I like writing. It helps me put things in perspective.
Yeah, I totally relate. It's a form of therapy in some ways. And then
For sure,
I
yeah.
think you hope that it resonates with somebody else, what you've but I for me personally, I don't know if the audience is ever like in mind necessarily. It's just really like I have to get this out of my body or it's poisoning
Yep.
me.
Same. I always tell people that I never write for an audience, and I know like some people say that you should, but I write what is coming from inside me because when I write for an audience, it does not feel as authentic, and I want my work to feel very authentic.
Yeah, well, you would think that we would all want that. I mean,
Yeah.
I would think that, right?
You'd think, yeah.
So do, when you have an idea for a book or a story, how does the idea come about? Do you hear like the first line, or do you hear the characters, or and do you plot it out, or do you just like wing it and go and let the story lead you?
Yeah, those are great questions. And again, this has changed as I've gotten older. I usually start with a central conflict. So there's a central conflict within myself that I'm working on. So for one of these novellas I've been writing, it's about how women can play into the patriarchy and hurt one another instead of, banding together to help each other. So that was the central conflict that I was dealing with, and that's what started the book. And then I do have a very like rough plot line that I try to plot out. It's just a couple bullet points just to try to help me make sure I have, an arc, that the characters mature, that the conflict is addressed and the theme is addressed. And then usually, it's weirdly enough, if I hear anything, I will hear the last sentence of the book. So like
Really? That's
when I'm
so
thinking about
interesting.
it, the first line never comes to me. It's the hardest thing for me to put on paper. The last line will always pop up at some point when I'm drafting.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, I don't know why it's like that. I'll always know where I'm going, but sometimes I don't know where to start. So it's an
What
interesting issue.
I relate to that as a human. Isn't that like the metaphor for life? I mean, we all know where we're going. That's funny. You don't know what, so
Yeah.
how are you able to like circle that back and find the, is that like one of the last things you do, the opening of the book?
So usually I give myself a little bit of grace, knowing that my strong point is not the opening page.
Yeah.
So I will just start anywhere and then I'll write for a while until I fit into a groove. And then like 95% of the time, I'll go back and cut. So like I'll see that the first five paragraphs was just me warming up, whatever. And I'll go back and try to like find the real beginning
Yeah.
after I'm done the book, because I'll know better like where I was going.
Oh, I love that. That's a good idea. That's good
Yeah.
advice. You're just warming up in the beginning.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that happens a lot. I see that with a lot of short story writers too, where like if I'm editing their work, I'm like, this whole first paragraph was just you figuring out your voice. And you can really start strongly with the second or third paragraph.
Sometimes that's conversations. I don't know if it's just my impatience, but being a poet, I'm like, okay, get to the point. Like,
Yeah.
don't need to like lay out all of this like groundwork for what you need to tell me. Just tell me. I
Absolutely, yeah.
can see that way of writing can translate, or even communicating translates onto the page. It's funny. I usually hear the first line, so it's like the and I don't necessarily know where I'm going with the poem, and then it sometimes it surprises me. Like it reveals itself in the it's like it seduces me, and then I'm like, okay. And then I go and see where it takes me, and then it gives me the special surprise at the end. It's always a little
I love
rope.
that
I
special
know it's
surprise at
really,
the end.
yeah. Sometimes it's like the middle of the night, the line will come. I'll be like, whoa, okay, I'm here for you.
No, I love that. That's how I used to be, and I don't know what switched, but I think that's such a inspiring way to write because you know exactly where you are. And I think the heart of the piece can come quicker that way. So I really like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I can't think of anything that's more rewarding than when a poem reveals itself to me. Like I'm just like, oh, this is, I had no idea this is how it was going to end. Like this is so cool. Like, thank you. What a gift. A gift. So, what advice would you tell your younger writer self?
Honestly, don't get an agent.
Interesting. Why do you say that?
I think, it's a deeper issue. My agent was like so lovely, really lovely, but I got really caught up in writing for other people and writing for the market and writing for, what she and other editors wanted me to write, that I lost my voice for 3 years.
Yeah, I
I
remember there was a period where you were like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm done writing.
couldn't do it. I wasn't getting published. I wasn't enjoying my writing. My writing was not good. And it's because I just really got into my head like, oh, you need to do this, or you need to write like this, or you need to write things about specific issues and not others. And that, cost me 3 years of creative writing where I could have been writing what I wanted, and what is more authentic for me. So I think if I could go back, I would tell myself to not worry so much about getting an agent and worry about making sure I stay true to my authentic voice.
That's beautiful advice. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because it's like so counter to like everything that you hear.
Yep, I think that's for a reason, and I think there's a lot of capitalism inherent in the publishing industry, and we just kind of have to pick what we want. Do we want to work within those confines, or do we want to, as my friend Silk said, she said, we should build our own table. If people are not letting us sit at their table, let's build our own. And I think that's kind of how I approach it now.
I am so grateful for you and also for this podcast, because every single time I interview a writer, it's like a masterclass for me personally.
I
It's
can't
kind of
imagine.
selfish. It's a little selfish. Like I'm getting advice as a writer from all the people that I'm talking to, and the like icing on the cake is that other people can listen and get the advice too. But like this is all about me. I'm so excited. Like thank you for because I'm seriously like in that place with my own writing, and I always go back to like Henry Rollins or like Ani DiFranco, or just do your own thing. don't get caught up in I call it the poetry industrial machine, but you could call it literary industrial machine. But I like that, you know, we put these labels, like, why would this form escape capitalism? Why wouldn't it escape this kind of grind culture, or you have to fit in a box and everyone like needs to look alike and be the same and fit a certain model, so it's marketable, and why would this escape it, even though, you know, we come into it with, I mean, at least I did, with romantic notions about what it means to be a writer and that we can help the world be a better place and all these things. And then to slam up against this model, is some people quit. Some people are like, but I am grateful though that you did come back to writing. And when you had told me, I'm done with this, I'm like, yeah, right.
I don't believe you.
I don't believe you. You're too good. You're too pure. You're going to find it again. It's going to find you.
Yeah. Critical case of burnout, but I learned my lesson.
Yeah. But sometimes we have to move through the fire to learn what works best for us. So, and now you're an even better writer for it. So thankfully.
Yeah.
You're young. What's three?
What's three years? It feels like so much when this is all I've ever done. You know, this, I've been writing since I was 8. So, you know, it just felt like a big chunk of my life. But I learned a lot during that period of time. So that was good.
That is good. So let us know what you're reading right now, or who are some of your favorite authors and poets and or poets.
I don't read as much poetry as I should. I really like poetry. I think it's the hardest, like, style to write, and I'm always in awe of people that write poetry. I've honestly been reading a lot of my friend's work lately. So my friend Yuli, I mentioned her earlier, she has a collection of short stories that she is putting out into the world, and I've been spending my last couple weeks reading through those. And it's a really powerful collection, and Yuli is a master of tone and voice. And so reading through her work has kind of made me reflect on mine and how I want to use character voice and narrative voice. So that's kind of been what I've been focusing on for the last couple of weeks.
Nice.
Yeah.
So if you feel, do you get writer's block? And if you do, what gets you unblocked?
Oh my God. Don't we all get writer's block?
Some people say they don't. It's funny.
I don't believe them, but I've gotten writer's block since I was a kid. And the only thing to do is, like, it's like an emotion, right? You can't push the emotion away or it just gets worse. Mm-hmm. You have to just, like, let it flow over you. And if you don't want to write for a couple weeks, don't write for a couple weeks. I feel like you can't push yourself into something. And I feel like your body will know the right time to pick it up again. You'll feel excited about it again. Sometimes we burn ourselves out and we need the break. And that's actually what the writer's block is that we've pushed ourselves too hard and we're in creative burnout. So I think honoring your body and your mind's boundaries are the only way to move through it. Pushing yourself through it may work for some people. Others just need a rest. And for me, resting has been really helpful.
I love that. Yeah. Sustainable and generative. It's not, not grind, 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 produce, produce, produce. We're not meant to do that. I love it. So before you share a piece of your work, what would be like your elevator pitch or lightning strike piece of advice for other writers?
I think I always say this. Did I say this at the last one too? But like, I just really feel like you have to believe in yourself. Like, as a writer, we're going to face cruelty. We're going to face people who have edits that make no sense. We're going to face people who don't understand what we're talking about. We have to cultivate a really strong sense of our own worth as a writer. That's the number one most important thing I think anyone can do, because it's a really tough business. It's a really tough industry. And having an inner sense of confidence is the only way that you'll survive.
I love that. Thank you.
Yeah.
So let's hear some of your work.
Okay. All right. I'm going to read this random essay that I started writing a week ago. It's called How to Age Gracefully in Five Shorts. One. My date tells me she was in prison for check fraud. It's not as uncommon as it sounds, she says. I still can't vote. 20 minutes ago, we were at a small gathering at a record shop where an open buffet sent the stink of cheese and onions through the oncoming summer air. She left me with her friends to climb on top of her red Mustang outside, where people took photos of her stretched out on the rooftop, hair swinging, legs splayed, her nose ring glinting in the sun. Now we sit across from each other in a Thai restaurant down the street. It is pre-COVID in Florida, and there are no barriers between the booths. Music tinkles in the background, barely audible. I chew on a spring roll, unbothered. In my mind, this could still be something, regardless of her leaving me with her friends earlier. We have a spark, a connection. This is how I approach all dates at this age, with endless possibility. You should be able to vote, I tell her. That's messed up. Our sushi comes out. I eat two full rolls without worrying if the sodium in the soy sauce will make me bloat in the morning, or if something in the fish might make me sick later that evening. I'm not scared of her breaking my heart or saying something that will shake me so deeply I start questioning if people even care for one another anymore. I am 27, she is 35. I really like you, she says. Where do you want to go after this? Two. My date in Massachusetts is a dark-haired version of Laura Dern in Jurassic Park. She wears cargo pants and tucks her hair back in a clip, small strands of gray weaving along her hairline. We drive to a park where the pines and oaks are draped with multicolored lights, a carousel bobbing over a coat of snow. There are no palm trees, no sunlight. She drives us around in an old Jeep that's black, encrusted white at the bottom from snow and salt. This is a strange place to live, she admits. It's like everyone is testing me, I tell her, because I'm not from here. It took me 10 years to fit in, she replies. We stop at the carousel, and she cajoles me into climbing on. It's cold enough that I shiver under my winter coat, my throat tight with nausea. It's been pushing at the base of my throat since I met her, under the lamplight of my small house, the driveway still plowed and tinted with dirty snow. It's not the snow I was seeking when I moved here, the soft, powdered kind that shimmers in the light. This snow is hard and crusted and sharp. See, she asks, it's fun. It is fun, but it's hard to enjoy that fun when you're nauseous. I'm nauseous because certain foods make me sick now, even though they never used to. I'm nauseous because I'm getting age spots on my shins and wrinkles around my eyes. Because it's my 7th month in Massachusetts and things are still not settling well. My novel hasn't sold. My coworkers are openly hostile. The cold is hard and unfriendly. It keeps me inside, curled up on my couch, trying to stay warm. Each night I go to bed with this terrible feeling that things are closer to the end now than they are to the beginning. Let's go salsa dancing next time, the Laura Dern date says when she drops me off. I am 32. She is 49. We never do go dancing. And that's it.
Oh my goodness. I want more.
Well, there's three more shorts, but they're not edited for you.
You'll have to share it with me when it's published.
I will. Thank you for having me read.
Oh, and thank you for being you. I love your perspective and the way, like, because I know you, it's always great to like hear the writing of someone you know, because it's like it's like you get to know them even deeper. It's like this warm feeling, like they're hugging you. So thank you for sharing. Aww. And I'm so glad to see you that, you know, even though you're in the frigid north and we miss you in Florida, you'll have to come visit.
I will. I miss everyone there, and Florida is really near and dear to my heart, so I will be back.
Yes. And you can always do, you know, house shares or get out of Dodge and come here in the winter and be a snowbird. How fun.
I totally will. I totally will.
Totally could. So thank you so much, Chelsea. Thank you everyone for tuning in to Typewriter Talks. If you want to know more about Keep St. Pete Lit, you can go to keepstpetelit.org. And if you feel so inclined, please make a donation to help support this programming. We are really happy to be offering this every week and also to create a platform for writers to share their work. And please tune in next week and we'll see you then. And until then, please continue to read and write on.
Typewriter Talks features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. It is hosted by Maureen McDowell, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. Listen in to hear discussions on all kinds of writerly topics. Our goal is to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Learn more about Keep St. Pete Lit at www.keepstpetelit.org.